You're listening to the Fourth Wall Comics Podcast, episode 25, recorded September 16th, 2012. Well, I was sitting in the sandbox. Now realize it would sound like most to be when I look back and say so beautiful to me.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Fourth Wall Comics Podcast number 25, or if you go by our old numbering, 150.
Yeah, we're going back.
Just going back
just to confuse you.
For one episode. So this is technically podcast 150. I'm Jesse.
I am Freddie.
I'm Danny.
And joining us this week, very special guest. He's been on the show before. It's been a while, but for the 150th episode, I wanted to have one of our best guests come back, Cammy from Cammy's Comic Corner.
Wait. I thought this was episode zero or fourth wall now. What the hell?
I know.
It's special.
I know. This isn't. I know zeros and nows are big nowadays, but we're the last bastion of numbers that keep going.
You couldn't do a point one at least? You had to go with. Okay, whatever. Just to record your little show.
And
all
to
right?
make it even more confusing, I'm having a nice brewski while we do this because I'm just trying to make myself forget. I don't know. No, and so, therefore, I'm incorporating the Cammy's drinky talkie at the same time.
I drink to forget I'm recording podcasts too, Freddie. Don't worry. We're both in the same boat there. What are you dining upon this evening, Freddie?
It is an October beer. It's a seasonal beer. Blue Moon Harvest Pumpkin Ale. Pretty tasty.
Nice.
Very seasonal.
I only have a Lagunitas IPA from Petaluma, California, where I'm currently recording from. So, you know, I give you an tap or an cheers.
Yes.
Yeah. Plink. Yeah, there, y'all heard it. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it. And for those who don't know, of course, you know, Cammy does Cammy's Comic Corner, podcast, videos. You can
Writes
find that.
For Bleeding find... Cool.
And Bleeding Cool. Writer.
Yeah. Damn.
When I got the moves like Jagger, let me tell you.
And everyone can find that stuff on CammysComicCorner.com.
And if you want to hear Cammy talk about beer, maybe there might be a show about that sometime in the future.
It's in progress. It's kind of on the back end, but yes, no. It's like Jesse was saying, just check out CammysComicCorner.com for all the updates and stuff.
Awesome. Thanks again. Thank you for coming on because I know it's been a while.
Yes, thank you for coming on. See you later.
That's it.
So, the three of us.
No, but we're going to talk about three cool books today. I was going to say great, but I don't want to jump ahead. We haven't even started talking about it yet. We're going to talk about three books today, one from DC and then two indie books. Batman Zero, the only Zero, I think.
Speaking of Zero issues.
Yeah, The Creep, number one. We talked about the Zero of that, though, before.
Yes.
And Stump Down, Volume 2, Issue 1.
And that has an O in it, which kind of looks like a Zero.
We're trying to theme this with Zeros, I guess, this week. So, yeah, let's start off with Batman Zero. I was kind of hesitant about reading this book at all, actually, because I'm not a big fan of this whole Zero thing that DC's doing. I see it more of as a nuisance that's in the way
like
of
throwing
me.
A wrench in the gears.
Yeah, like Freddie and I, we did a podcast about Swamp Thing and Animal Man, and we talked about how Rot World's coming up. And before Rot World can start, they have these Zero issues that they got to do first for Animal Man and Swamp Thing. And I feel like it's just in the way of getting to what I really want to read. And I feel like the Zero issues are just a way to try and make people less either confused or upset about the whole renumbering. So the Zero issues are put in place to be like, oh, here's why we did it.
Well,
don't worry.
It's depressing reading a book in August and you get done reading it and you're like, yeah, Rot World, can't wait. And it's like, in October.
October. Yeah.
You're like, oh.
The next big story arc for Batman, which is the Return of the Joker, like, you want to read that. I don't want to read...
Yeah, the minute I saw that preview image, I was like, I want to read that right now.
Exactly. But issue zero of Batman, I mean, if you're going to read any of these Zero issues, I guess this would be one of the better ones. I haven't read the others, but I did enjoy this one, I
can
say. Changing
things up a bit.
It does change things up a bit. It takes place 6 years prior in Gotham City, and this is before Bruce becomes Batman. Actually, and it tells us a small story about the Red Hood gang, and they rob a bank. And there's actually a really cool introduction where one of the thugs actually is Bruce undercover, And the way
kind of similar to the beginning of Dark Knight with the Joker. I couldn't mm-hmm. help but think about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It kind of, the way the events unfold in the bank are kind of interesting, and the back and forth between the Red Hood and Bruce. Yeah, the rest of the issue is really just Bruce kind of figuring out what to do next, and that typical thing of, like, something's missing. They changed a couple of things, I guess, in the origin. This is where you get to see him change. For instance, he's at a base in Crime Alley instead of Wayne Manor. And they Alfred actually makes mention of how he should go home and contemplate what to do next, all that. And Bruce is like, no, I want to be here. This is where the fight is. This is where my parents died.
Even Gordon seemed to be like, this was a stupid idea for you to come here.
I did like the scene with Gordon at the end, though, where he throws that makeshift battering, or the proto battering. Yes. And it's a timed one, and they do a cool thing with the time mechanic where he throws it for 3 minutes, and it kind of goes around, and him and Gordon are talking at the same time. So it has this like ticking clock sense to the scene, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But overall, like reading this first part of the story, because there's two separate stories, one written by Scott Snyder, and then the other written by James. How do you say his last name?
Tynion IV. Yeah, Tynion. His protege, if you will.
Yeah, who also wrote on the annual. Mm-hmm. He did the Mr. Freeze story, which I think less said about the better. And it was a really cool, like, small little story. This is actually more interesting to me. Like, this first little bit here was more interesting to me than Batman Earth 1. If Scott Snyder decided to do a whole, like, arc with I'm sure he's going to incorporate it into the Joker, because it leaves off kind of on a cliffhanger, so I'm assuming it continues into the new Joker arc. And it'll be a flash back and forth between present day and then back then.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see that the story continues in 2013.
I like that. I like, because it makes the Zero issue kind of mean something. It gives incentive for people to read the Zero issue later when they pick up issue 13. They're like, oh, what they're saying, check back here at issue Zero. So it's kind of cool, and it's well written. So I did like the front story quite a bit, and I hope to see it continue in Batman as it goes on. The backup story, I don't know. It takes place a year after. Mm-hmm. The Zero issue, which is the first part of the story, and it showcases kind of all of Batman's allies and their new kind of origin, I guess. It shows Dick Grayson, Tim Drake, and Jason Todd, and how they're kind of reinterpreted in this new Gotham. And it's in the backdrop of this whole piece is Gordon introducing the Bat Signal,
and how it's Barbara Gordon's there too.
Yeah, and Barbara Gordon is there with Commissioner Gordon on the roof, and then they see the signal, and it kind of inspires everyone. I don't know, like, because, like, it seems like with this whole relaunch, at least to me, it didn't seem like much had changed at all. Starting at Batman 1, everything was the same, and now all of a sudden it looks like that they're just trying to come up with ways to make it different without having to change much. You know what I mean? Like, they kept the main storyline intact, but now they're going back and changing stuff for the sake of changing it, I feel like. And I don't know if I like it. Like, I don't know where the backup story will – like, I don't know if they're going to re-show everyone how they became Robin and Batgirl respectively. But I don't know. I'm not really sold on the whole reintroduction of all the lore and stuff.
Well, I'm kind of interested to see how all three Robins are going to play out, because, you know, over the course of 40 years, each time they introduced a new Robin, it was out of necessity. It was like an organic – evolution of the stories that were going on with, you know, Robin, with Dick Grayson becoming Nightwing, and then Jason Todd being introduced and then being killed, and then Tim Drake showing up. But now apparently all three coexist side by side in this new world. So what exactly, why? I mean, I understand what they're doing, because they're tightening up decades of continuity, but it's going to be interesting to see all three Robins basically existing at the same time, if there's going to be like a battle for the cowl, battle for the Robin or something.
Right.
Because like the storyline with the death of Jason Todd, it's obviously very important to the Batman mythos and all that. And now seeing him that he, in this new continuity, he was like around with all the other, I don't know how that is going to work. And
it's funny
Snyder,
how...
I mean, Snyder is known for like taking kind of history and then working with it, because like the whole Court of Owls thing, and then like he does it in Swamp Thing,
where
the green and the rot and all that, like that existed already, and he just kind of brought it back, and like Poison Ivy being part of the green and all that stuff, like he knows how to work it all together. But I'm just curious,
still being respectful to the original as well.
Exactly, and I'm curious to see what he does with it. I'm cautious, but I'm optimistic.
The real thing that matters is, what did Cammy think of it?
Well, in regards to the Robins, I remember there was already a little brouhaha earlier in the Teen Titans run when Scott Lobdell wrote in that Red Robin was never a Batman Robin. He was a boy wonder. And so now that we're seeing this in the backstory as him being perhaps a brainiac child, went to this academy. I mean, I was already blown away that Jason Todd in this backstory is now an associate to murder, as opposed to the original origin where, you know, he was just caught lifting Batman's tires. So yeah. It's going to be interesting because it looks like Dick Grayson, out of the three, has the normal, usual roundabout, oh, my parents are going to die too. Flying Graysons are just going to be down to one. But my main concern when I was reading this issue was, now that Red Hood has always been ridiculous. Like, it's a big dome. How can he see? But now it's so ridiculous that it's over the guy's face. And like, I can only think his nose must be really squished against the glass there. Because, like, how can you breathe out of that? And then also, if they're going to incorporate this as the Joker's origin story in any way.
Because
I was looking at the chin, and it didn't really look like a Joker's chin. But I like that he knew his men well enough to know that, you know, oh, well, number five would love to kill. Number five is left-handed. It's like, okay, Bruce is slowly learning these things, and we're seeing him fuck up and not save everybody and save the day like he is doing now. So I think while it wasn't really needed, and I guess in a sense I am going to be interested to see where the story goes, because like you guys, I really wanted to just go into the Return of the Joker and see, you know, Becky Cloonan's gorgeous art and see Joker fuck some shit up. Because if Scott Snyder's been waiting to tell this story for the longest time, then something tells me we're in for a ride this October.
Am I the only one that was upset that we didn't get an appearance by John Robin Blake? I mean, come on. They need to get him in the comics already.
That will be revealed to be, like, Jason Todd's real name or something.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you.
Be John Robin Blake. But, Freddie, what'd you think overall of the book? I don't think we've heard from you yet.
Yeah, it was surprisingly good, and surprising that it's going to continue into next year. And, you know, this is, I think Scott Snyder must have some amazing... like his wall of his office just must have like these insane plans. Maybe him and Grant Morrison got together and they figured out how to make it.
they
both seem to have like these 10-year plans for, okay, this is where I'm going with this. Like, and everything is always, well, the last thing you thought, that last thing was crazy. Wait till you see the next thing. I've never heard anyone be like, yeah, that last thing was really crazy. The next thing's going to be much more toned down. And no one's ever said that. So.
You think they took the same class on making crazy wall boards? With, like, different stories?
Yes, but I think Grant Morrison was on acid the entire time, so he didn't pay a lot of attention.
Well, I think they've been hanging out with Rip Hunter and Booster Gold as well, with that whole chalkboard thing that DC is well known for. So I think that's where they were inspired. Yeah.
Obviously.
Chalkboard. But yeah, I would say, you know what, I can comfortably say, I would say check out Batman.
Yeah, I don't think if you've read any of Snyder's stuff and you just want to grab one issue and kind of maybe get a feel for it, this is a pretty decent issue to start with.
Yeah, the writing is, you know, spot on, and it's pretty clever the way he works everything.
I don't know why you would want to start with this rather than issue one,
Go back to, or even go back to when he first started, like pre...
back when it was Detective Comics.
Yeah.
But then you might get confused, and you might end up getting that other guy's Detective Comics.
Nobody wants that. Yeah, moving on. So the next book, The Creep, number one.
Speaking of zero issues, we discussed The Creep, number zero, a couple episodes back. This is by John Arcudi with art by Jonathan Case. It was originally premiered. The issue zero we reviewed was a shorter introduction story presented in Dark Horse Presents, and now this continues that story. It's a sort of a neo-noir set in the 70s, or the not the 70s, set in like the 80s or the 90s, about this guy with Freddie, what's the name of his disease? I don't remember any longer.
Gigantism?
He was a football like superstar in high school, and he grew up and ended up getting a sort of giganticism, sort of like kinda Andre like, the Giant.
Yeah, Andre the Giant, yeah. Or the guy in The Rocketeer, which
I was just about to say that. Yeah, yeah, the one of the goons from The Rocketeer.
Right. With he has all his like bones and his muscles have all kind of expanded in an odd way like a giant, and he has a deep voice, and everyone in his neighborhood and everyone he kind of comes across look at him like he's a freak and a weirdo. It kind of ruined his life as a high school football star, and now he is a private eye and drinks a lot, tries to Barry is Payne. He gets called by his old high school girlfriend because her son has just killed himself, and there's sort of a mystery about why he would have killed himself, and that's the case that he's on in this issue. I said on our last podcast when we reviewed issue zero that one of my big problems with the way some people handle zero issues is by making it issue one, like, yes. As opposed to, I think the Batman thing and the whole DC thing in general makes sense to call it a zero issue. You're going back, you're showing something from before the beginning of the narrative. But when, like, when the Creep, or I also mentioned in the last podcast, some of Warren Ellis's stuff, the zero issue is completely necessary.
Like, I think you mentioned Black Summer from Avatar was one book that you made an example of.
And I feel like you're just confusing, you know, people who might be new to comics who might not even notice that there was a zero issue. They pick up issue one and they're left off having no idea what's really going on in issue one. And that's kind of the case in this one, because
that's exactly the case, in my opinion.
Yeah,
because there's not even anything that says, hey,
previously on the
Creep. Previously on the Creep, or previously in issue zero. Like, there's no intro prologue that tells you who this guy is, what he's doing, what's happening, why that homeless guy sees the kid in the street, like, nothing. Like,
I think we generally agreed that they probably made it in issue zero because they had previously, it was a reprint of material from a Dark Horse Presents, so they probably made it in issue zero, so to not rip off people who already had that issue, so they'd understand this is a reprint of previous material. But because it's so necessary to the story, it's not a prologue, it's the first chapter. They kind of are going to end up confusing people. But basically in this issue, so in the first issue, he's just getting to know the parents and the people surrounding this mystery of why this kid killed himself. This boy who killed himself had a friend who killed himself earlier. Did he do that because suicide is contagious? Was there something else? He has a grandfather that he loved, but the grandfather is now a homeless man, and he's like a schizophrenic, and he's crazy, and he has these bizarre fantasies. This issue pretty much just picks up directly from that, and he's still getting to know. Now he interviews the father of the kid who killed himself, and that's about all that really happens in this issue. I don't know. Freddie, what did you think of this continuation of issue zero of The Creep?
I was very surprised to not see any type of mention. It's almost like they could have put an asterisk beside every line and put, if you want to know what the hell they're talking about, go to issue zero. Yeah, I mean, this definitely is like the slow burn type of comic book, like the independent film, like, you know, noir type setting to it. I thought the art by Jonathan Case, who I mentioned last time, also did the art in The Green River Killer, one of my favorite books of the last year. I thought he did a good job again with the character's emotions and the frustration that, I think his name's Oxel, goes through when he has this prostitute in the opening scene, and he's trying to focus on the case, but all the while, you know, because of his condition and with the gigantism, he's getting really bad headaches and he sweats profusely, and the pressure of the case and the fact that it's connected to a previous girlfriend of his, it's a lot of stuff weighing on him. And I thought that the artist did a great job of conveying all that. And another scene that really caught my eye was a flashback sequence to when the boy was alive.
I was just about to say that, yeah.
Where he's having, it's like a fishing trip.
But it's in this kind of like
pastel,
style. Yeah.
Like watercolor kind of look to it. That I always think that's really cool when, like, he has a certain look, but like J.H. Williams, where he can break in and all of a sudden, okay, the flashbacks are going to be like
but
this.
But he did it for a reason, because, like, even when Oxel makes that phone call and, like, his panel's normal, but then the panel where he's talking to, he thinks he's talking to that woman that he's working for.
Yeah, he thinks it's Laura. Mm-hmm. Or no, he thinks it's Stephanie, but it is
Laura. He thinks it's Stephanie, but it's Laura. And then it cut, like, the panel, the one panel has the pastel, looks all, you know, the dreamy one, and then it goes right to the Laura one where it goes to reality, where he realizes that he was kind of dreaming, or, like, he was kind of hallucinating over the phone who he was talking to. It was really cool. That was probably my favorite part of the book.
It would be interesting hearing from someone that didn't read issue zero and just read issue one. Would that apply to you, Cammy?
Well, no, I actually read issue zero, just because I had originally read the chapters in issue zero in the original format of Dark Horse Presents, but I just wasn't pulled to it. Like, after reading issue zero, because I was like, okay, well, I'd rather read it all in one sitting than finding those issues again and reading them back to back. And it just didn't really capture my attention. Like Freddie was saying, I really enjoy Jonathan Case from River Killer as well, but it's just this story just it has no drive to me. Like I get it that he has a condition, and that's what makes his story unique, is he wants to be a private eye and track down this case. But had you told me, like, oh, by the way, we're talking about some other comic, I would not have picked this up. But since you wanted to talk about it, I picked it up just to, you know, carry on, soldier on. But I'm not going to be back for issue two, let's just say.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not much of it. Actually, the problem is that there was a bit of a mystery and a question of what exactly was going on in issue zero, but I think that's not really built upon in issue one.
Well, I mean, did you guys pick up on the kind of like homosexual undertones going on?
Oh, I was going to say, I liked, there was a scene that I actually liked where he's on the subway.
Right, that's what I'm talking
and he's,
about.
He's thinking about the case, and he's sort of he's thinking about the things he's learned so far and whether or not he can actually want to handle this. He's on the subway, and there's a gay couple sitting across from him, and they're talking to each other and being kind of funny, and he's just kind of staring at them, and I think it's left ambiguous on whether he is actually staring at them and curious about them, or if he's just staring off into space as he's thinking about things, because then one of them flips out and says, you know, starts yelling at him, saying, what are you staring at? Piss off, you know, leave us alone. Who are you to stare at anybody? Because you're a freak. And I actually liked that scene a lot, because something like that once happened to me where I was at an airport and I was completely zoned out and I was just staring straight ahead. I was completely in my mind with my eyes open, staring straight ahead. And apparently for like 5 minutes, I'd been looking at this woman, but I had no idea. And I got snapped out of it when she started flipping me off and like, saying, stop staring at me.
Second, so in that like, moment,
it turns out she was 87 years old.
No, she was like in her, you know, like 30s or something. She was like blonde. Yeah. And she probably thought I was actually just staring at her in the airport, but I swear I wasn't. I don't know where my mind was. I was like traveling. It was like Thanksgiving. I was on my way back to college. I was like totally zoned out. So I kind of felt for him in that moment. Like aside from the scenes you always see about people, you know, just making fun of him because he's a freak. You see that in like every movie, every television show. I found that scene pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know if you interpreted Freddy as possibly he was like maybe gay. Is that what you meant?
Is that what the boy, maybe the two boys that killed themselves were romantically involved with each other.
Oh.
I actually didn't think of that at all, but now that adds a lot to that scene. Now that you mention it.
Yeah. That could be completely wrong, though. That's what I like about this, is because it's not hitting you over the head with like exactly where it's going. It's kind of like even the plot is a mystery, which I can see how Cammy could be like, where's the forward momentum in this? Like, you know, but I don't know. I guess I have more patience for it, or...
Well, now that you mentioned that, though, it kind of does make sense. And if they do build upon that as a possibility, I might come back. But I want one of you guys to tell me whether I should or not.
We'll tweet you.
The book is called The Creep, so it's probably more of a character study for this character and his condition and having to deal with it and being brought back to his past with his old girlfriend. So it's probably less about the mystery than really how this character handles the situation. So it's probably more important whether or not you like this character than if you're swept up in the mystery.
What about you guys, Danny and Jesse? Are you going to stick with this, or are you going to abandon ship?
I probably will, at least one more issue. I want to see, like, with issue zero, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked the introduction to Oxl. I really liked the style of the book, the noir. I'm a sucker for noir tales and strange heroes or anti-heroes, like, that have weird quirks about them. But, like, I love that kind of stuff. And I thought the writing was pretty sharp in issue zero. But in this one, it was still okay. But the writing, I felt like, was dulled a lot. The one scene in the subway, now that you mentioned it, Freddie, that, like, that is really damn clever and cool if that's what they were going for. But, yeah, I kind of want to see maybe if they'll get their footing in the next issue and start, like, moving forward and start getting the hang of writing this in issues instead of in the little pockets that they were doing it in. So, yeah, I'll probably read the next issue. But I do want to say one of my favorite parts about this issue, though, was the cover.
Oh, yeah.
By Mike Mignola. That was pretty badass. If he, like, drew the book permanently, I'd be happy with that. Because I think this would be a perfect character for him to draw on a regular basis. But, yeah, I probably will check out the next one.
What about you, Danny?
Yeah, I definitely plan on sticking with this. I mean, it's slow going, but I might not remember to pick it up every month, unfortunately, but It will be something that maybe when the trade comes out, or maybe when I say, oh yeah, have I read The Creep? I might go back and try to pick up the issues I missed.
You'll be watching The Rocketeer one day.
Yeah.
You'll be like, oh shit, was that book? With that guy.
Rocket.
Rocket.
So another book that's kind of a slow burn that we haven't seen in quite a while.
My goodness, yeah.
Is Stumptown. Stumptown's back. Volume 2, issue number 1. Our favorite detective, Dex Perrios, is back once again. We last talked about this comic in September of 2010.
Wow, are you Jesus.
And if you go back and listen to that, we made mention of the fact that Greg Rucka and Matthew Southworth said, we'll be back in 2011. And here we are going toward the end of 2012. And so, yes, she's back finally. And I think, or what I would hope, I haven't heard this from either of the creative team, is that this time there won't be any delays, because I don't know if you remember from the first volume, but it was filled with problems of delays and things like that. And you could see why with the amount of detail that Southworth puts into his artwork. So, yeah, if you haven't read that first volume, definitely recommend to pick that up. It has a really nice hardcover that's out, and you can go back. Every issue of it was a big book of the week for us back when we used to do that. So if that tells you anything.
Yeah, because that means a lot to a lot of people.
It should mean that should carry weight.
The big book.
That's like the Academy Award of comics podcasts.
Yeah, it happened weekly though at one point. So how important can it be when it's handed out weekly?
I'm saying if every issue gets number, it gets the big book.
Oh,
that,
okay,
that
yeah,
really
fair enough.
Something.
It did, I think.
Yes, it
might
did.
Have. Okay. Oh, well, I'm sorry.
I checked. So,
but what about this issue, Freddy? What happened in Volume 2?
We see Dex. And she's finally setting up a real business for herself, where she's not going to be working out of her house. She's going to have it her own office. And during this issue, she gets approached by two people wanting to. And while she's like, you know, hanging up stuff on the walls, she can't even get her place situated without people wanting to hire her to, you know, to do detective work. The first guy is running a construction company, and he's having equipment stolen from him, and he wants her to watch out over the construction site and see where the people are stealing, you know, who's stealing it and where they're taking it, and he wants to, you know, get all of his equipment back. And she refuses to take him up on the deal when she realizes he works for Rain or Shine Construction, which it's owned by one of the guys that was in the first volume.
Hector Marienko. He was the guy, the boss from the first one, that was the dad of the girl that was missing.
So that's kind of like the only thing that in this first issue that you kind of need to know from Volume 1. So we see this girl from this band called Tailhook come in a little bit later. And her name's Miriam Bracca. And she's missing her guitar. It's a Les Paul, Gibson Les Paul. And so she hires Dex to go and investigate what happened to it. But of course, that's not all there is to this whole guitar story. And she calls the guitar her baby. So at first she says, I'm missing my baby. And you're so as reading it, you're kind
of
like...
Well, the arc is called The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case.
Yes. So Dex then, toward the end of the issue, goes to investigate the guy who is kind of her guitar tech when they go on tour and tell Hook... And goes to their house, and turns out him and his wife are being attacked by skinheads with box cutters, which is just a horrible way to spend an afternoon, let me tell you.
Yeah. Not ideal for me, anyway.
Yeah, so Dex uses her cunning, you know, intelligence, and is able to outsmart them and get them to run the hell out of there, telling them that the cops are on the way. And then there's a surprise ending when Drug Enforcement Agent Kathy Chase... shows up on the scene and says, I'm going to blow your fucking brains out.
Chase, what a name.
I'm going to blow your brains out, Dex. And then, you know, so that's where we leave off here. This one, I got to say, did not blow me away.
My skirt was not blown up.
Yes.
I'll put it that way.
The way that, I mean, when we first read Stumptown Volume 1, Issue 1, it was like, you know, Rucka, I think at that time, it was around the time he was doing his, you know, now celebrated Batwoman, you know, Detective Comics run. We were in love with the guy at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And now, like, it just seems like it's like a guitar, and it didn't really... It's just, like, kind of a weak way to jumpstart Volume 2, in my opinion.
There was no punch in this issue like the first one had.
Yeah.
Like you said, I remember reading issue one. I'm like, holy shit, I got to read issue two. Like that was the first thing that popped in my head the second I finished reading the book and I put it down. Like with this one, I didn't get that punch. It was nice to see her again. Like it's a character that I liked a lot and she was missed. But at the same time, the story, at least so far, it wasn't engaging enough in the first issue to make me go like, oh, I'm really excited to see the rest of this arc.
I'm going to stick with it just because I enjoyed Volume 1 so much. And I, you know, Rucka is such a great writer that I put my faith in him.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you haven't read Volume 1 and this is where you're
Please read Volume 1.
Yeah.
Well, this is just really interesting because I really enjoyed this issue. Like, of the three that we're talking about, I found the most enjoyment out of it because it is back, finally. I mean, I got to be hesitant as well because it's like, okay, I don't want to celebrate it too much because how far along is Matthew Southworth on the, you know, art for the second issue? Like, yeah. Are we going to wait another couple of months? Because when you have a late artist and, you know, that sticks with you, then people remember that. And then they go, okay, well, I'll just wait for the trade or whatever. But I think the mystery in this first issue was, why is the DEA involved? And, you know, why do these skinheads want this guitar as well? So I'm thinking there's a bigger picture here.
Oh, definitely.
That you know, maybe they're trying to transport drugs through to guitars or whatever, and this guitar in particular has some nice, you know, maybe meth from a guy named Heisenberg, for all we know. But it's really intriguing. I really love the art, so I'm really looking forward to issue number two, despite, you know, what you guys and your qualms with the book. So, yeah.
I think you guys are way off. I think that the guitar is going to turn out to be one of the weapons from Killapalooza.
Nailed it.
It's going to be a big tie-in.
You didn't read this book, right, Danny?
No, I did not.
Okay, there you go.
But I read Killapalooza, unfortunately.
Right on. I want to know why the skinheads couldn't have showed up with a better weapon than a box cutter. They're like,
maybe they were high. And they're just all tweaked out, and they were
maybe they're all Home Depot employees, and this is what they do with their afternoons.
They just rip off their shirts, run around and break into people's houses with box cutters, and threaten them. I did like one part. I think I mentioned this before the show. I don't know why, but when Greg Rucker wrote that character with his nose broken,
oh yeah,
like, he pronounced things with a broken nose. I don't know why, but I thought that was funny.
I didn't even notice in one of the panels, both the skinhead guys, when Dex is saying, oh, your time's running out. You have, you know, half that time to vanish before the cops show up. The next panel, the skinheads are both completely cross-eyed. Like, the fact that she talks talking about numbers makes them both...
What?
Speaking of the broken nose, I really like that, the art that Southworth did with the, you could see, like, his thumbprint in the blood. Because, Sean Murphy does that same thing on Punk Rock Jesus. That's just a great technique that I think a lot of more artists should feel free to... And Kevin Mellon on Heart. He did the same thing as well. But yeah, nice little technique.
Yeah, you were a wealth of knowledge.
Well, that's why you have me on. I tell you the things that no one else cares about.
Right on.
Now, I don't know if you guys planned it out this way, but there is a theme in all three issues here, or in all three books that we talked about. They all have detectives.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
And I was going to say, hey, why don't we just talk about 228 while we're on the subject? But, you know, never mind. I just noticed this now.
Chew, that's written by Jonathan Lehman, isn't it?
I think. I don't know. I don't read it.
I would love to hear Jonathan Lehman talk about Legos personally.
I see what you did there. I appreciate it. Yes, yes.
Which you can hear on Cammy's new monthly show, which you should totally go check out.
Yeah, Freddie told me about that, and that sounds amazing. I need to go listen to that.
I was telling these guys that you should keep it continuing with, like, you know, have Jason Aaron talk about bear hunting or I don't know, whatever Jason Aaron does.
So I think that wraps up for the books for this week. But since it's the 100th and 50th show, I think we should do something a little extra here at the end. I think so. We got Cammy here. We should do a little bit more. How about that?
Absolutely.
So this past week, we asked our audience, we asked the listeners, I should say, and friends of ours to provide us with questions for us to answer, like comic related questions or stuff that they would think would be interesting for us to talk about. And we have some.
So I'll read them, and then I guess you guys can chime in. How's
that? Yeah, you can be the moderator.
I'll stick around.
Wait. There's one involving New York. You once lived there. So
that's right. Yeah.
So stick around. Okay. First question here in our first ever Q&A. Jason writes in and asks, if Elvis was alive, what current comics do you think he would enjoy?
Graphic Elvis.
Is that a comic?
Yeah, they had it for free comic book day.
Oh,
it's like
okay.
A big hardcover bound thing.
So you think he's
like
you think Elvis is kind of self-centered and he would want to read about himself?
Yeah, probably.
I'm going to say Scott Pilgrim. I think he could understand that youthful exuberance that they put off in that book.
I think he'd like because there's about food in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's true as well. Cammy?
Well, Blacklist Studios, who have a title called Robot 13, they have another title in their line of books called King, with an exclamation point at the end. And basically it's about an Elvis-type character going around and killing monsters. So if he is bitten to the narcissism, I think he would find that an enjoyable read.
So it's kind of like a Bubba Hotep kind of
I was just about to say, you think he'd be into Bubba Hotep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the king. He ain't nothing but a hound dog crying all the time.
All right. Next question from Jeremy.
It's Elvis here!
A little bit more serious question here. Put on your thinking caps.
Oh.
If you could have one character from the big two, Marvel and DC, switch companies, two characters, who would they be and why? Mm. You're our leader, Jesse. Who pick two.
Oh, I have to start.
You have to start.
Your
favorites are, would you like to see Captain America in the DC universe or something like that?
No, I would not at all. I'm trying to think of a character.
Would you like to see Batman in the Marvel universe?
Stop telling me what to pick.
Okay,
I'm trying to think of a character I would miss. Oh, go ahead, Cammy. Wait, okay, Cammy, you go first.
It'd be interesting to have the Punisher in the DC universe just because Batman's big on, you know, no guns. And basically all of DC, usually the bad guys are the ones who kill people. So just to have a force to be reckoned with, like the Punisher, come and fuck shit up. I think it'd throw a lot of heroes off their game, thinking like, whoa, there's a rule book that we play by, and this guy's just coming in and making up new rules. And then to take over into the Marvel universe, let's just say off the top of my head, Firestorm, just because.
I am going to say the obvious. I'm going to say what we're all thinking here, and I'm going to say I'm going to bring Thanos over just to see him bitch slap Darkseid. Okay.
That'd be an interesting pick, though.
And then who would take his place?
Oh, I have to pick now. I have to pick someone from DC to go over to Marvel now.
Yeah, that's how this works. Yeah.
Gosh.
From the Green
Lantern. Apocalypse, the mutant that also looks like Darkseid.
What about him?
I was just going off of Freddy's thing. Jesus, never mind.
Because their costumes look similar.
Yes.
All right. So
I have mine.
Okay.
This goes back to Marvel versus DC. You know, it's debatable just how successful that comic was, but there was one panel in all of that which, like, got my imagination firing immediately, and it was Batman showing off against Venom for one panel. Like, Venom's just on top of a roof in Gotham, and Batman's like, what the hell is this thing? And they're just, like, squaring off for one panel, and I was like, I'd always wanted to, even though those intercompany crossovers are not usually very good, I still always wanted to see Batman legitimately fight or team up with Venom. So if they could somehow, either Batman into Marvel or Venom into DC, I think probably Batman in Marvel would be a lot cooler because Batman's so, he's got his, you know, whole code and everything. And just seeing that conflict with other Marvel characters not conflict would be interesting.
I think the one from Marvel to go over to DC I'd probably want is Ghost Rider.
Oh, wow.
I'd be interesting to see him with Constantine and Swamp Thing and all those characters,
good, yeah.
Even Frankenstein.
That's really good.
I don't know, it'd be kind of cool to introduce that whole, his mythos inside the DC universe would be kind of cool and have this whole little storyline going on. Like Scott Snyder writing Ghost Rider for DC would be fucking amazing. Yeah,
wow.
So, that would be that. And honestly, like I was thinking about it for a second, I'd kind of be cool to see Green Lantern go over to Marvel. To see, like, it would introduce a whole new element to the Marvel cosmic universe, and it'd be interesting to see how they interact with Thanos and the Guardians and the Nova Corps and all that. Like, it'd be kind of interesting.
Well, this next question kind of poses a similar headspace here. Which superhero would be the best and or worst roommate? So,
I got this easy.
Superhero.
Superman would be the best roommate, obviously. He'd be very tidy. He'd always clean up after himself and imagine. He'd never be there. He'd be off at the fortress, or he'd be, you know, out in Metropolis doing something. And if the apartment was a mess, he'd clean it up real fast. Worst. Wolverine. I think he'd be a shitty roommate.
Yeah, he would.
He'd constantly be smoking indoors. He'd be drinking. He'd have all his weird X-Men buddies over.
You'd come like, in at 2 a.m. So trying to be quiet, not sneak up on him, and he'd freak out and try to kill you, try to snick you.
I think Beast Beast would also be a bad roommate because I'd be trying to watch like a cartoon and he'd be like, "Why are you watching such lowbrow entertainment?" And
I thought you were gonna say he's gonna shed.
Oh, that's why, yeah, because I'm hypo. You know, I need something hypoallergenic. That's what it is. Yes, and the fact that he had that romantic relationship with that green haired chick. What was her name? And I wouldn't want any of that going on under my. You know, my roof in a
bestiality.
Exactly. There you go.
Who would be your best roommate?
Oh, let me think about that one. Someone else take.
All right,
it away.
So Andy,
probably one of the worst roommates would be Punisher.
Oh yeah. Well, like, he's not really a superhero though.
Yeah, that's true. But if you like got a parking ticket or something, and then like you know, it showed up in the mail, or you ran a red light, he sees it, and then you walk through the door, and he just shoots you.
You're done.
Yeah, you're done.
Who would be your best room?
Maybe like Martian Manhunter. If you wanted like wacky roommate situations, like a Three's Company thing, he could pretend to be you when your girlfriend's coming over and you don't want to go meet her parents, so he pretends to be you. And then
Martian Manhunter will do it.
And then someone comes over and they're like, "Would you like this flambe that we set on fire?" And he freaks out and he starts knocking stuff over and trying to get away. And then the studio audience is laughing and he turns into a dragon and flies out of the room. That would be fun.
I'd watch that. Cammy?
Well, I'll start with best roommate. And I think just because I think he's a cool dude, Dick Grayson, because A, you know, he's not even going to be there half the time because A, he has a circus life, and B, he's, you know, Nightwing half the time. But he has good looks, so he would be probably the kind of guy who would bring girls back to the apartment.
I was just about to say something like that. I'm like, oh my god!
And he wouldn't
don't talk
bring...
for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm too married. I'm too married at this point. I didn't even think of like, how do you bring girls back?
I know. I was about to say no one before Cammy. Yeah, before Cammy brought it up, I was just thinking as you guys were talking. I'm like, I'm wondering, why didn't none of us pick either like a female superhero like Wonder Woman?
I was
or
going
Marvel,
to. I haven't,
or,
I haven't
Ms. Marvel.
Got, I haven't got my good one yet.
Oh, okay. But like, I like Cammy's direction where it's not directly the roommate, but Dick Grayson will bring. Over women that have friends, probably. And,
right.
Yeah. Smart.
As for bad roommate, could you consider Quentin Quire to be a superhero?
If I knew who it was, I.
It's the X-Men. He's a bad guy, right?
Kind of, yeah. Okay, so instead, I'll say the comedian, because he originally was supposed to be a quote-unquote superhero, but that guy's just bad news. He'd be sobbing at the foot of your bed, you'd wake up, he'd be like, "Solid punchline," I'd be like, "Oh god, don't kill me."
He's gonna rape you probably.
Probably.
At some point.
I am a redhead, so, you know, it's in the cards.
I think Rorschach would be a worse roommate.
That, okay,
he'd
yeah.
just be like, mumbling all the time.
He's smelling
like,
of
to
beans.
Himself, and like staring at
I was just about to say.
Yeah, he smells.
Just the open cans of beans everywhere.
Doesn't even heat him up.
God. And then, like, he keeps talking about dead dogs whenever you have friends over. It's like,
God, man.
A dog one.
And always the
like, going out on a date, that... and he's like, with a prostitute, and I'm like, you're like, no. And he accuses every girlfriend you bring home.
Don't
of
do
being
that.
A prostitute.
Oh, yeah. That'd be psychological problems right there.
All
right,
Freddy.
Can I pick my that sexual superhero that Stan Lee created? That Pamela Anderson?
Oh, Stripperella.
Yeah.
What about the pro?
Yeah.
You know, she'd always be good
pro.
On trend.
But no, she'd be bringing Johnny's back, though, to the
That's true. That
apartment.
Would be awkward.
She already has a kid. Yeah, she always has a baby.
So I'll
and
stick,
yeah,
I'll stick with Stripperella.
For best roommate?
Yeah.
That's the best roommate.
Yeah. Absolutely. Don't tell my wife,
what
please.
Does she want? And who's the worst? Who's the worst
I already
roommate?
Said Beast. Beast. He's not hypoallergenic.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. So the next question takes things in a little bit more serious route. Actually, very, very more serious. Not really funny at all. But George asks, will you guys ever go to New York Comic Con or Baltimore Comic Con in the future?
I've been to New York Comic Con. We've been.
Danny has been there.
Yeah.
You missed us.
Yeah, I've been there 2 years. I got a couple interviews with I got an interview with Scott Snyder. Yeah, they're on the site. I got one with Scott Snyder. I got one with the creative team of Stuff of Legend. And there was... the goon, not the goon, but Eric Powell, but my recorder didn't work, and
we transcribed it, though. It's on the site.
Yeah, it's transcribed.
Read that shit.
BreakTheFourthWall.com.
New York Comic Con is where I got the scoop, like, 2 years before Turtles Forever came out. They didn't say Turtles Forever is coming out, but I went to the Turtles panel, and they were like, you're going to see something where people from the past meet things from the present, and I said, yep, they're doing a Turtles crossover with the original and the new ones, and I got that like a year and a half ahead of time.
We are in the process of making plans to try to schedule one convention that we're all going to try to go to in 2013. Originally, we were going to go for WonderCon because we thought it was going to be in Anaheim again, but now that we found out maybe it won't be in Anaheim this next year, 2013. So right now, it's kind of up in the air, but we will let you guys know what happens with that. It'd be awesome to meet people.
Probably won't be Baltimore.
Probably will not be New York or Baltimore, sadly, because we don't live near any of those places anymore. What about you, Cammy? Are you going to be making any convention appearances? Got anything planned?
Well, while I despise the East Coast and would never go on my own accord, that New York Comic Con does look rather tempting. So maybe one year in the far-off future, I might make plans to go. If you guys follow Pat Loika, that guy goes to every freaking convention, like, in the United States. It's
Loikamania.
Crazy. Loikamania. I'll tell you, he's a maniac. But I always can live through the conventions through him with all the pictures he takes. But as for me, upcoming conventions include Ape, Alternative Press Expo in October here. So that'll be fun. But usually I'll hit the normal ones up next year. WonderCon, Comic-Con, and then Ape again. Maybe Long Beach, not entirely sold on it yet. Kind of.
You didn't go to Kamikaze.
No. Yeah, that was this weekend, and that's too long of a drive. Yeah. I'm up north now, so.
Fourth Wall was at Kamikaze for a very brief stint this weekend.
For about 3 hours, I was at Kamikaze.
So you missed us.
Yeah, so.
Johnny writes in and asks, what's the most embarrassing comic book you've ever read and enjoyed? Or read and not enjoyed, I guess. Either way, what would you admit to reading? I'll go first here because I read this one and immediately wanted to use this question because I did enjoy it, and I'm not really that ashamed of it, but I could see why other people would look down upon it. When I was a kid, I really, really liked Ren and Stimpy.
Oh my gosh, that was mine.
For some reason, my dad allowed me to buy the Powdered Toast Man comic book. And I remember reading this comic like over and over. It was only one issue. I don't know if there was more. They probably did more of them. I only had like issue one of Powdered Toast Man. But I really liked it. And I thought they did a great job of keeping that amazing Powdered Toast Man humor from the series right into the comic book.
Keeping it canon. Keeping it canon.
So that was the same one, Danny?
Oh, no, it wasn't the Powdered Toast Man, but when you said Ren and Stimpy, I freaked out for a second. I bought a bunch of Ren and Stimpy comics when I was a kid. Actually, pretty much I only, you know, like I'm sure, I have to assume that a lot of people got into comic books because of licensed characters. That's pretty much all I ever bought when I was a kid. If it wasn't a TV show, I didn't read it. But Ren and Stimpy was one, and there was for some reason, I was really proud that I owned this Ren and Stimpy comic book. It was Ren and Stimpy, not Powdered Toast Man. So I was really proud of it. So for some reason, like, I wanted people to see that I owned it. So I'd, like, purposely read it, like, in public areas, like, held up. Years later, it kind of reminded me, like, how people, before the Watchmen movie came out in New York City. I mean, I saw it at least 6 or 7 times, people reading Watchmen on the subway in full view, like, look at me, I'm reading Watchmen, I'm cool. So for some reason, wanted people to know I own this Ren and Stimpy comic until one day, I maybe did this like 3 times, until one day some like teenage girl walks by and she's like, she turns to her friend and she's like, oh my gosh, my brother has that comic book. And she's like, no, seriously. Even though she didn't directly insult me, I could kind of tell from her tone. And I just kind of put it down and put it back in its bag and slowly slunked away. I was 8 or 10 or something.
It's so, always the girls breaking your heart.
Yeah.
What about you guys? Jesse? Cammie?
Well, the one that I can think about that I was embarrassed just from reading in general, and this was back when I was like taking the bus and the trolley to my comic book store. I picked up like the first issue or two of Crossed from Avatar, and like I was just embarrassed to read that on the bus because it was obviously torture porn, gore, you know, all this, any outrageous situation that Garth Ennis says, I'll just do this times 1,000. And here I am on the bus, and like I felt so awkward because I was like, someone's gonna think I'm like a serial killer reading this thing. And I haven't read an issue since, but I was like, okay, never again will I read my comics on the bus, if they're from Avatar at least.
And the only one that keeps popping up in my head that I read it and I was kind of ashamed for reading it was Corn Boy. That was probably the only one I've ever read out of all the books we've read, and I was like, why the hell am I even reading this?
I would take it that's an indie book. That's not a mainstream obscure superhero.
Corn Boy?
That's a very obscure thing. Yeah.
Look that up.
Freddie, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, from Dynamite.
I never read it, but I remember us talking about it.
If you type in Corn Boy on Google Images.
I thought we actually read it.
I did not read it. Maybe
don't
you did.
Do that. I thought you did.
Nope.
Why did I read it then?
I don't know.
If you type in Corn Boy on Google Images, you get out of like 15 results, maybe only 2 of them are actually the comic, and then lots of very bizarre pictures, including one of like this little boy laying down in a huge pile of unpopped popcorn. It's just the strangest stuff.
I got one more question from Jason.
Yeah, please go.
So that one didn't really go out on a bang like I thought it would. So I'll throw one more your guys' way. Let's see here. He sent quite a few in. Okay, if Spawn was a hot dog, what would he taste like, and would you eat him? Cammie, go right ahead.
My tongue would be pierced, but he would taste like, a demon spawn, and it wouldn't be, I wouldn't relish the experience, so pass.
You would not eat a spawn hot dog.
No.
I would eat it, but it'd be burnt, and then I'd probably spit it out immediately. But I would eat it for the sake of saying that I tried it.
I would eat it, but if only I could have a Savage Dragon beer to down it with.
Well, that sounds delicious.
If that existed.
Because with this hot dog, if McFarlane's making this hot dog, it's going to go on hiatus. Some other hot dogger will come in for a small run. It'll go on to even more hiatus. And then finally, McFarlane will finally come around after losing several different lawsuits to different creators, finish making the hot dog, and it won't be worth the wait.
It won't be what you thought it was going to be.
No.
Neil Gaiman will make an earlier version of the hot dog. Then he'll sue for the rights to it.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, well, there you go. There's our Q&A.
Wow, first one. It was pretty successful, I think. We may do more of these, hopefully. So, yeah, I think that about wraps it up for us here. Once again, I want to thank Cammie from Cammie's Comic Corner so much for joining us, having fun. I know it's been a while, but we appreciate you coming on. You can check out all of Cammie. Like I said, mentioned earlier at the top of the show, you can check out all of Cammie's stuff at cammiescomiccorner.com. Is there any cool stuff that's coming up soon you want to pimp out while you're on here?
Oh, yeah. There's a new episode at the end of every month, and so I've got some special guests this upcoming month I can't wait for. But October's episode as well is going to be pretty fantastic. But, yeah, you can check out all the updates on cameoscomiccorner.com, get the weekly My Favorite Comic Book Covers that came out that week, and then you can see those reposted on Bleeding Cool, several different articles on Bleeding Cool, and then you can follow me on Twitter, @CamComicCorner.
There you go. And as for us, you can always find us at the same place, at breakthefourthwall.com. That's our main site where we have all of our previous podcasts, sidecasts, special editions, articles, videos, all that crazy stuff up on the main site, all previous 150 podcasts that we've done, all on there for your listening enjoyment.
And that's not including
we also have
Halloween special episodes.
Oh, shit. Coming up soon, Halloween Shocktober Spooktacular returns. Our favorite time of the year here at the Fourth Wall.
We're getting ready for it.
We got movies picked. We are trying on costumes and everything.
And
we're getting pumped for Halloween.
A quick note, if you're wondering where Art is, he has unfortunately went on his erotic unicycling tour of Europe. It's this thing he started doing,
yeah.
And he won't be back for a while. He really got into it, so unfortunately for the next month or so, there will be no Art. So send your letters in, let us know how much you miss him. We'll do our best to get him back as soon as possible from that unicycling trip. We'll have to you know, persevere,
yeah,
you know, on without him.
Yeah, I know. The I mean, what can you say to an erotic trip through Europe? I mean, you really can't.
I think you guys
down.
Need to embrace his decisions and his new hobbies. You can't be so down on him. If he wants to live his dream,
we need to support his lifestyle.
I mean, exactly. I mean, you think he's going to thank, you know, you guys in his acceptance speech when he gets the key to Europe? No. He's going to say, this goes out to my family, my friends who supported me, not those assholes over at that podcast I used to do, because now I'm doing another podcast, Unicycling Nudist Weekly, and I'll have them know it's quite erotic and titillating. I have your back, Art. Don't worry. Include me in your acceptance speech, please.
Oh, well, you can be his first guest.
Yeah.
On the new podcast. So yeah, and then you can also find us on Facebook. Look up the Fourth Wall Comics Pod or Fourth Wall Podcast. You'll see the 4WP logo. Like us on there. We post things on that, and you can find us on Twitter at 4WP.
Yes,
we tweet stuff. So yeah, all these different places, all this geeky goodness, all over the place. Go check it out. But as for us, we're done here. Thanks for listening. I'm Jesse.
I'm Freddy.
I'm Danny.
I'm Cammy.
And I'm Danny.
And see you guys next time. And once again, that was Danny. He wanted to reaffirm that who he was. We just wanted
no
to make
confusion.
Sure.
No confusion.